We're holding on page Mem Aleph in Ksubas Ois Lamed Dalin. Hanoisa Perek Shneim also, so the Perek begins by talking about arrangements that a man might make with his wife when with his wife when she's previously been married and has a child from a previous marriage as far as the support of that child, and then it continues to talk about various details of the arrangements for an almana as in terms of what she's entitled to from the Yisoimim in terms of her upkeep and maintenance and everything during the time when she's still living as an almana until she remarries, until she passes away. So one thing it talks about is that the house where she and her husband lived in while her husband was alive, then many times she's entitled to continue living in that house as well. And the Mishnah and the Gemara deal with various details of that. So now, having mentioned that point then, that the Yisoimim have to show her a certain kavod in that and in other areas, so now the Gemara talks about how Rebbe told his children to have kavod for their stepmother, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara. It's going to mention their mother, but the Gemara is soon going to explain that it was actually their stepmother. The Yerushalmi actually makes the connection more explicit, because the Yerushalmi says that's just that. Part of Rebbe's instructions is that they should have her continue living in the house after he passed away. With the idea being, in other words, generally the Nesi'im, they were provided a house and they were provided everything else by the Tzibur, so once the Nasi passes away, then his wife doesn't necessarily have a right to continue living in that house because it belongs to the Tzibur, and now she's not serving the Tzibur anymore because her husband passed away, but here it was Rebbe's personal property, basically. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, b'shas p'tiros v'shor Rebbe, when Rebbe was about to pass away, Omari says, Levonai anit tzorich, I need first to speak to my sons. He had, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he had two sons, or at least two sons that we know of that are going to be in the narrative over here. Rabbi Gamliel, his elder son, and Rabbi Shimon, his younger son. Whether he had more, doesn't say. Nichnasu Bonavatzlai, so his sons came to see him. Amalahem, the first thing he tells them, he's Zoro B'chvoid Imchem. Be careful with the covered of your mother. Now, why does he need to say that? If it's Minat Torah, that's the Gemara is going to explain soon each of the details that he's saying. He continues, Ner Yehe Dolok V'mekoymoy. Even after I pass away, the candle, the lamp, should still be lit where it was before, as if I was still alive. Shochan yaher och b'mekoyme, and the table should continue to be set with my place, as though I was still there, because as the Gemara is going to say, Hitaka is going to be there, as we'll learn soon in the Gemara. Mitatei mutsas b'mekoyme, and similarly the bed or the couch should be made up like it was before. The mita can mean whether the bed that he sleeps on, but often in the Gemara also mita means the couch. As we know, they would recline by their meals, like we do by the Seder, and they would recline on mitos, on beds or couches, so it can mean that as well. In any case, so he's saying everything should still be set up like it was until now. Then he continues, another detail, Yosef Chofni, Shimon Efrosi, two of his Hamadim, Yosef Chefni, actually, Chefni means from Haifa, which nowadays they often call Haifa, that actually comes from the Arabic name of it, in Lashon Kodesh, and in the original Lashon Kodesh, the place was called Haifa, so Chefni would mean from Haifa. And Shimon Ephrosi, and Shimon from Ephros, which one meaning of Ephros is that he's from Shevet Ephraim. There's a couple of other possibilities. One is that Ephros can also be another name for Beis Lachem. Anyway, Heim Shim Shuni B'chayei, those two Talmidim served me while I was alive, Veheim Isham Shuni B'moisi, and they will serve me after I pass away. Which makes it sound like they're going to be the two Talmidim who are going to be taking care of Rebbe's body as far as the Tahara, and dressing in the Tachrichim, and so on and so forth. But we'll see in the Gemara soon that Rebbe had another point in mind. Well, let's go analyze each of these things that Rebbe said. He says, he says, be careful with the covered of your mother. Why does he need to tell them? That's honor your father and your mother. So even after he passes away, she's still your mother. The answer is, she wasn't their actual mother. She was their stepmother. Rebbe's first wife, apparently, for Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Shimon's mother, had passed away, and Rebbe remarried. Ion Yaakov points out it's very possible that actually she raised them. She may not have just been their stepmother, as in he married her after they were already grown. He may have married her while they were little, and she helped raise them. In which case, that would be a special reason for him to say that they owe her honor. Well, the Gemara asks, Eishes of Nami Daraisahu. Fine, but to have to honor your father's wife, even if she's not your actual mother, is also Daraisa. Ditanya, Kabed Es Avichov Es Imecha. When the Pasuk says, honor Es your father and Es your mother. Now, we have a machloikas in a number of places in Shas, whether in fact we doubt in the word Es in such context, or do we say it's just the style of the Pasuk? But we learn, according to the opinion that we learn from the word es, that es avicha zu eshes avicha, the es means someone who's secondary to your father, namely your father's wife. So even though she's not your mother, but just by virtue of the fact that she's your father's wife, the es imecha is a bal imecha. And es your mother would mean your mother's husband, same idea. Even though he's only your stepfather and not your natural father, you still have to honor him. And vov yisero v'davis achicha agodu, when it's kabed es avicha ve es imecha, where it could have said kabed es avicha es imecha, or something like that, then it comes to teach us also that you have to show honor to your elder brother. Machlokas HaPoskim, whether that means any brother who's older than you or dafka the eldest one, does it also include an older sister? The point is, in other words, that we see that honoring their stepmother is also daraisa. So that being the case, then why does Rebbe have to tell them to honor their stepmother if anyway we're learning it from that pasuk? Eitz Yosef points out over here that actually really what it is that the Rambam at least holds that the stepmother and the stepfather are actually daraisa, whereas the elder brother would be more midrabanan. Because when we're saying over here, l'rabis ochem agado would really be only an asmachta. Anyway, the point is, so why does he have to tell them this instruction? The answer is hani mili mechayim, because that would only apply while he's alive. While the mother is alive, then you have to show honor to your stepfather, because you're showing honor to your mother, then therefore you have to show honor to her husband as well, and vice versa. While your father is alive, then you have to show kavod to his wife for the same reason. But it wouldn't apply after the father has passed away. Nevertheless, Rebbe is telling his children, in this particular case, I'm giving you instructions to continue to honor her even after I'm gone as well. Now, again, Yaakov points out there may have been a special reason over here because she helped raise them. In addition, also, we're going to talk about in the Gemara soon that Rebbe had the unique thing that he was actually, in a sense, alive after he had passed away, so that would be another reason. He actually is still alive in a certain gashmiistic sense, and therefore that would be more of a reason for them to have covered for his wife even after that. Okay. Next. Rebbe's instructions, the next set of instructions were, he said, that the candle and the table and the bed or the couch should all be set up as they were before. My timer. Now, why is that? Because kol beis shimshi have a osila beisi. Every beis shimshi, Rebbe would come to his house. Now, beis shimshi literally means bein hashmoshes, so it can mean bein hashmoshes of any day. However, Rashi points out that in general, in Gemara terminology, the word Beit Shimshi usually means Friday, Bein HaShemoshes. We talked about this earlier in the Masechta. Because other days of the week, Bein HaShemoshes doesn't really matter that much. It matters, let's say, if you had a baby during that time, you need to know when his bris is going to be. But other than that, there's not a great deal of difference. Let's say, Bein HaShemoshes, there's not a great deal of difference whether it's Tuesday or Wednesday now. But when it comes to Friday versus Shabbos, there's a big difference, and everybody's rushing around to get everything done. So therefore the name Beit Shimshi, Bein HaShemoshes, came to be used specifically for Erev Shabbos, Bein HaShemoshes. So now, every week, Erev Shabbos, Bein HaShemoshes, Rebbe would come to his house, and Sefer Chassidim adds, it's brought on the side of the Gemara over here, he would actually make Kiddush for his family. The Rebbe brought this in many Sichas, yeah, this is an example of the idea. We know that Yaakov Avinu loy meis, and Rebbe is like that as well. There's many Sichas where the Rebbe brings the idea that Nossi, Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi, is Rosh HaTevis Mitzutzah Shel Yaakov Avinu, a spark of Yaakov Avinu, and therefore he had some of the same quality as Yaakov Avinu, that even though on the surface he passed away, and Rashi has the famous expression on the Gemara there in Tainus, which is Yaakov Avinu Leimes, where Rashi says, Nidma Lahem Shemes, it seemed to them that he had passed away, and they duly did what they were supposed to. They made a hesped for him, and they cried, and they buried, and they embalmed, and so on and so forth, but nevertheless, in reality, Leimes, there's a level of, the Rebbe explains in a number of sichas, particularly from Nun Aleph and Beis, that there's levels within Gashmias itself. We touched on this the other day when we talked about Gan Eden. So within Gashmias itself, there's a level of Gashmias where Nidma Lehem Shemes, that it seemed that he had passed away, and you would see a body in front of you, but there's a higher level within Gashmias itself where Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis. So now we're saying Rebbe was the same kind of thing, being Mitzutzah Shel Yaakov Avinu, even though on the face of it he's passed away and he's been buried, as the Gemara is going to say later, and they made a hesped for him, and so forth, as the Gemara is going to give us all the details. Nevertheless, there was a sense in which he was alive, and therefore he was actually able to come in a goof and be motzi his family kiddush.
Are they taki yotzen?
Are they are indeed yotzen. Otherwise, what would be the point of Rebbe coming and making kiddush for them? Yeah.
Making kiddush.
No, but no. The understanding of it is that he's actually be able to be motzi them. Maharsha points out also, he's called it Avenu HaKodesh. Now, Kodesh, the concept of Kedusha has to do with life. Kodesh, the ultimate Kodesh is Hashem, and Hashem is Chai V'Kayim La'ad. So therefore, when Rebbe has a special name, Avenu HaKodesh, then it means he partakes of a certain aspect of that immortality also, where therefore he's alive even after he's gone, ostensibly B'Gashmius.
Yaakov Lo Mish,
as Emes Liakov. Yeah, that's true, yeah. So Rebbe had the same kind of quality as well. So that's why he's saying that the candles and the bed and everything should be set up as before. Actually, Ion Yaakov points out, when you think about it, he's given the instructions that the candle and the bed, etc., should be set up, implying that he's saying it should be set up all the time. Well, if he's only coming back home on Friday evening, why did he tell them to set it up only the Kavod Shabbos? He says because this way it wouldn't be so obvious if they prepare it every day. The Gemara is going to point out there's a problem. Shaloi lohotzi laz. You don't want to make it look like, wait a second, he's able to do this, and the Uli Tzadikim are not. Does that mean he's greater than them? People are going to start talking badly about the Uli Tzadikim. He didn't want that. So therefore, if they have it set up all week, then it's not so obvious that once a week he's actually coming home for that. Mashenkin, if they only set it up for Shabbos, then it would be more blatantly obvious. Well, the Gemara tells, Hahu Beis Shibsha, one time it happened, one Friday evening, Asoi Shibavt Kokaria Bava. A neighbor, one of the women neighbors, came and called by the door, that she knocked on the door. Omra Amsei, but the Rebbe's maidservant says, Shiki, please be quiet, the Rebbe Yossi. Rebbe is sitting over here. Kibin de Shama, when Rebbe heard the maidservant saying that, Tuv or Shuv Loi Osa, then he never came again. For that reason, in order not to be motzi laz on the Uli Tzadikim, people are going to think, how is it that Rebbe has this unique quality who's able to come back every Friday night in a goof even to be motzi his family, and no other tzaddik before him is able to? So people are going to think the other tzaddikim must have been of lesser caliber. So therefore, from now on, Rebbe stopped. Once it became publicized, then Rebbe stopped coming. The Chidah actually brings a very, very interesting thing in Shema Gdolim. Like this, we have we have the Rosh is when we think of the greatest among the Rishonim, the Rosh is somewhere near the top of the list over there. The Rosh had a father named Rabbeinu Yechiel. We don't really know a whole lot about him. We would think, okay, he must have been a Dehoi ben a Yid to have a son like the Rosh. But nevertheless, the Shema Gdolim brings that actually a story from an earlier sefer. That actually Rabbeinu Yechiel had this quality as well. He also had the ability to come back in a goof to come back to his family. He didn't for the same reason. He comes in a dream to a chaver of his, and he explains he doesn't want to for the same reason Shaloi Lahotzi Laz. And the Chidah actually discusses over there and says that in his case, in Rebbe's case, we're saying he didn't mind coming back as long as only his family knows of it. Once it started getting outside the family, like over here, then he stopped coming, as opposed to Rabbeinu Yechiel didn't even want that his family should realize that he has that special quality that nobody else does. So we only know of it because he came in a dream to a close chaver of his and told him. The Chidah, by the way, goes on and points out an interesting thing in this regard. He says, La'alocha, we have all the time. We go to the oil, we go to other kibrei tzaddikim, we say tilim, we daven over there, etc. What happened to, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, there's a concept called loyag l'rosh. You're not allowed to do mitzvahs within a few amas, like davening and whatever, within a few amas of a kever, because like you're making fun of the mess and saying, ha ha, we have the opportunity to do mitzvahs and you don't anymore. How is it we don't worry about that kever tzaddikim? He says, because we see over here that there are tzaddikim, such as Rebbe and such as Rebbe Chiel, who have that special quality that even after they pass away, there's still loy mess, and therefore, so they're not mason, so therefore there's no loy glorosh. So this is how we have it. When we go to the oil, yeah. I mean, in the mice, we tuck in our tzitzis when we go to the oil. But other than that, we stand over there and we say tillim and we whatever, yeah. What? Regular kvarim, taka, you have to be careful to be outside 4 amas of the caver, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Yeah. That's why you're tucking your tzitzis, yeah.
From a
regular caver, yeah.
Taking off the shoes is the same thing.
Taking off the shoes is a different matter. That's out of cupboard for the tzaddik. I'll derech like you don't wear shoes in the Mishnah. Okay. Onward. The Gemara continues. Now, Rebbe's next instruction was Yosef Chofni v'Shimon Efrosi. He said that Yosef Chofni, actually, whatever. Yosef Chofni v'Shimon Efrosi. He said Yosef from Chofa and Shimon from Efros. Heim Shimshuni v'Chaye v'Heim Shimshuni v'Moisi. He said, they served me as Talmidim while I was alive, and now I want them to serve me after I pass away. Well, So therefore, he means in this world, they thought, the Talmidim thought that it means that they were going to be the ones who are going to be in charge of the Tahara and the Tachrichim and all of that. What ended up happening is they saw these two, this Yosef and this Shimon, ended up passing away, and their mitzvahs were taken even before Rebbe's. They ended up getting buried even before Rebbe did. So they didn't. So they passed away either right before him or right after him. So Amri, so they realized what Rebbe meant. Shmamin alahu almahu dekarma. Rebbe doesn't mean they're going to be serving me in this world, as in taking care of my body. He meant that they're going to be serving me. They're going to be my loyal talmidim in the next world. V'haide omahachi. In other words, the same way we find, for example, we find malachim, so to speak, serving Hashem. So therefore, so the same way, they're going to be, they're neshamas. They're going to be close to Rebbe in Gan Eden, and they're going to be serving him over there. So why does he have to mention that point? So why does Rebbe have to inform them of that? Why is it important for them to know what's happening with the neshamas of these two talmidim? Because we don't want people to say milsa havoy lahu. You know what? They must have done something wrong. You know why they lived this long? It's because Rebbe's chus was protecting them. So if they passed away right after Rebbe, let's say, then people are going to think that maybe they were Bali Averis or something, chas v'shalom. By Rebbe saying in advance, you should know they're going to be serving me, people will realize that no, the reason they passed away at this time, not because Rebbe's chusim are not protecting them anymore, but just the opposite, because they're very great. They're very great talmidim of Rebbe, and they deserve to be close to him, l'asid lavay. In Gan Eden. The Haflah actually brings an interesting thing from his father. He says that, why taka these two Talmidim? And he says an interesting point, because generally you're not allowed, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, you're not allowed to make use of a Talmid Chacham to serve you personally. You're going to have somebody serve you as a personal servant, it should really be more an Amma Oretz. So now, the vort is then, if most Talmidim of Rebbe themselves, of course, would be high-level Talmid Chacham themselves, but we find elsewhere in the Gemara that it mentions that people from Haifa and people from Ephros had trouble pronouncing Lashon Kodesh properly. We find in other Gemaras, and therefore they wouldn't be teaching Torah to other people, so they wouldn't be such high-level Talmid Chacham themselves if they can't even enunciate the words clearly, so therefore Dafke picked people from those two places that they're going to be as Meshorsim in Gan Eden. Because in any case, they're not such high-level Talmid Chachamim that there should be a problem with him using their services.
What about the Indian of not using a Kohen? Is that similar?
That's something else, yeah. There was an idea of a Kiddushah. That's something else, yeah. So that explains why he said about those two. He didn't want people to misjudge those two. Marshall also adds the detail people are going to think that they're going to say, so you know what, why did they pass away Davka now? Because they're going to think that if Rebbe hadn't said, now that Rebbe is going to die and they don't need to serve him anymore, so now his schus is not helping them anymore, people are going to think it's not just that Rebbe's schus protected them. Till now, they were serving Rebbe. Now that Rebbe doesn't need them anymore, then there's no reason that Hashem doesn't need them in the world anymore either. So now Rebbe wants to stress, on the contrary, they're going to be continuing, like they serve me in this world, they're going to continue to serve me in Gan Eden as well. Next. Omalahem, the next thing he tells the people around him, now that he's given his initial instructions to his children, Omalahem l'chachmi Yisrael anitzorich. The next group that I need is the Chachamim. Nichnasu etzle chachmi Yisrael, so the chachmi Yisrael came to see Rebbe. Omalahem, and he has his instructions for them too. Number one, altis beduni ba'ayoris. Don't make the hesped for me in the middle-sized cities. You have, when it comes to the halachas of Leining Megillah, for example, we have this krakim hamukofin choyma. You have walled, big cities, walled cities. You have, on the other extreme, you have kfarim, little villages. And in between, you have ayoris, cities, the towns. So Rebbe is saying the hesped should not take place in the towns. As we're going to see, the Gemara is going to explain soon why Rebbe gave that instruction. And he says, make sure the yeshiva gets restarted after 30 days. The first 30 days, they're going to be mourning for Rebbe, and we have a concept, when a Talmid Chacham passes away, then his yeshiva is bottle for 30 days. But after that, he says, don't continue the avelus past that, restart the learning in the yeshiva. Then he also gave them the following instructions. Shimon b'ni Chacham, my son Shimon is a Chacham, Now, on the face of it, that just sounds like he's stating a fact. You should know that Shimon is a Chacham. The Gemara is going to discuss later on what he means by that. What does he need to inform them of that for? Gamliel bni Nasi, my son Gamliel will succeed me as Nasi. Chanina bar Choma, Yeshe Barosh, Chanina bar Choma, who was one of Rebbe's senior Talmidim, will sit at the head, meaning he'll be the new Rosh Hashiva. Now, this was actually a departure from the way it was until now. Until now, generally speaking, the Nasi was also the Rosh HaYeshiva. We find, for example, that when in the story 100-odd years earlier, when they deposed Rebbe Gamliel as Nasi, and they were looking for a new Nasi, and they ended up picking up Elazar ben Azariah, the question was, they asked him, do you want to be the Rosh HaYeshiva? Because Nasi and Rosh HaYeshiva were synonymous. But now Rebbe is going to split up those two jobs. He's going to give one of the jobs of Nasi to Rebbe Gamliel, and the other one, Rosh HaYeshiva, to Rebbe Chanina bar Choma. A couple of reasons that are given for that. One idea is the Gemara is going to explain soon that Rabbi Gamliel did not have the caliber of Chochma of Rebbe and of the previous Nesiim. So he couldn't be appointed Rosh Hashiva. The Rosh Hashiva has to be a greater Chochma than everybody else. Nevertheless, he is entitled to the position for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain later, but therefore, practically speaking, he had to appoint the greatest Chochma who was available as the Rosh Hashiva. He didn't want to give it to his younger son, Rabbi Shimon, because that would be slighting his elder brother, Rabbi Gamliel. In fact, by the way, I mean, we do find here and there in Shas, we do find Rabbi Gamliel ben Yosher Rebbe. We find him in Pirkei Avos, Perek Beis. We have a few other places he's mentioned in Shas. He really isn't mentioned that often. Now, Dodos HaRishonim, a sefer on Jewish history, says it may not be so much because Rabbi Gamliel wasn't such a great Talmid Chacham, as more he learns that his tenure as Nasi was relatively short. He passed away not long after Rebbe, and his son Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya took over, who was mentioned extensively in various places in Shas. On the other hand, based on this Gemara, it may also be that there was a factor that Rabbi Gamliel was not quite the Chacham as his father and as his brother.
Gamliel Nasi is the grandfather.
No, so when we talk, most of the time when we have Rabbi Gamliel in Shas, usually it's Rabbi Gamliel de Yavne, the grandfather of Rebbe. Okay, so you have the order is like this. The Gemara tells us we know originally they had the Nasiim and the Ovis based in, you had the five Zugas who are listed in Pirkei Avos, of which the fifth is Hillel and Shammai. At that point, the Nasius was not hereditary. In each generation, the Chachamim would pick the greatest Talmid Chacham to be the Nasi and the second greatest to be Av Beis Din. So you had Yosef ben Ezra and Yosef ben Yochanan, Yeshua ben Prachi and Nita HaBeili and so forth. Eventually they decided that the Nasius at least is going to be hereditary. So Hillel was the Nasi, and then after him, it ran in his family. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos that there was Hillel, there was his son Shimon, then there was Shimon's son, Rabbi Gamliel HaZokin. Then there was Reb Shimon Gamliel, the one who was killed as one of the Asara HaRugei Malchus. After that, after the Churban, then you continue to have. Then you have Reb Gamliel de Yavne. Most of the time when we have Reb Gamliel refers to him, once in a while it's Reb Gamliel HaZokin. Then you have his son Reb Shimon Gamliel. Again, most of the time when we have a reference to Reb Shimon Gamliel, it's him. Then you have Rebbe. So Rebbe is the seventh generation from Hillel, and altogether then he's the 11th Nasi in order, starting from Yosef ben Yezer. So now we're up to the eighth generation from Hillel, the 12th generation of Nasiim, which is going to be this Rebbe Gamliel ben Yosher Rebbe.
So Hillel
and his whole family were descendants of David HaMelech, although we did learn earlier in the Masechta that actually they were descended from a son of David named Shvatia. They weren't descended from Shlomo, but rather from another son of David named Shvatia. But in addition, there's also Yerushalmi that says that actually they were descended from David only on the mother's side. There's actually a Gemara elsewhere that then mentions Hillel being from Shevet Binyamin. So in that case, it would be that the descendant from Hillel is only on the mother's side. But yeah. Okay. Fine. Let's go through these instructions of Rebbe and understand what he meant with each one of them. When he says, Altis beduni ba'ayoris, he says, don't make the hespedim from the inn the middle-sized towns. So, the Chachamim thought originally, he must have meant Mishum Tircha because it would be a Tircha. Because you have people are going to come into these little towns. There may not be room enough for them, for everybody, and there's going to be crowding and arguments and things like that. Some Mephoroshim also point out that in Nayoris, you may not necessarily have, you may start having arguments who should be the one to give the Hespin. So they thought that's why he meant that particularly the Hespedim should take place in the big cities. He's saying because of the Tircha. Kiven de Chosid de Kasaki be Krakim, but they saw in practice they're making the Hespedim in the big cities. to us, to Kol Alma, and everybody else is coming from the villages and from the medium-sized towns, Omru, so they realize Shema Minam Shemi Koru. The reason why Rebbe wanted the Hespedim, Davka, in the big cities is for the covered. There would be a greater covered when there were more people by the Hesped. Now, Rebbe, the great honor, should care about the covered. Marsha points out, the Gemara tells us at the end of Sota, Mishamesi Rebbe, bot la Anova with Yiraschet. Rebbe, it said, when Rebbe passed away, then Anova and Yiraschet disappeared. So how is Rebbe the tremendous honor of, what does he care about his covered, that they should have a hesped for him dafka in the big cities? Marsha points out that there is the covered of the Torah involved over here. And so therefore, that Rebbe is not going to be mochel on. He wants that as many people as possible should come to their spadim to realize the greatness of the Torah. In particular, actually, there's an interesting explanation in that regard, that Rebbe wanted... Now, you have to remember, Rebbe ended an era in the history of Torah. He composed the Mishnayos. So from him on, from him and onward, you have a new stage in the transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So therefore, more than anything else, you need to be able to stress at that time the covered of Torah. First of all, that everybody should realize that what Rebbe accomplished with the composition of the Mishnah, it's a watershed in Jewish history. And from then on, everybody accepts the Mishnayos and nobody argues on it. And as we know, the Amoraim don't argue on Mishnayos. So it's important to stress at that time the covered of Torah, that everybody should realize that that's how it is. They'll realize also this point, as we said, that Rebbe is Chai V'Kayam in a sense. All of that fits together with this idea that Rebbe accomplished something that had never been accomplished for the Jewish people before. So, in fact, Marsha points out an interesting point. The expression in the Sota over there is Mishames Rebbe Botla Nova V'Yiraschet. What we mean is, even as far as Rebbe himself, while Rebbe was alive, he could be moichel on the covered of his Torah. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that a Talmid Chacham or even a Nasi wants to be moichel on his covered, he could. Now, when Rebbe passed away, then he's specifically saying we should arrange things that there's not a diminution of his covered. So therefore, in a certain sense, like after Rebbe passed away, even for himself, there's not another like there was before. Because now it's important to stress the covered of Torah, so everybody should realize the greatness of the Torah and realize the tremendous accomplishment that Rebbe had done by composing the Mishnayos and realize that this is it. This is now a new era in the transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh.
When was the first writing of the Gemara?
So it's a good question, actually. There is actually a machloikus between Rashi and the Rambam on that, and ultimately it goes back to two different versions of Igeres Reb Shura Gaon. Rashi, whenever he refers to what Rebbe did with the Mishnayos, Rashi always consistently uses the expression that Rashi sider or tiken or other expressions like that he set up the Mishnayos. The Rambam uses the expression kosav, that he wrote them. So in other words, it comes out, according to Rashi, according to the Rambam, what Rebbe did is he actually wrote down the Mishnayos, he wrote down the centerpiece of Torah Sheba'al Peh for the first time, because Eis Lasas Lashem. Whereas according to Rashi, it would mean that no, he didn't write it down, he made, this is the official Mishnayos from now on, and everything else is only Brises. Ultimately, you have, there's a letter from Rav Shuda Gaon, you're talking about a 100 years or so before Rashi's times, about 150 years before the Rambam's times. Rav Shuda Gaon was asked about the history of the transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and he wrote an entire letter in answer to that, which was a very valuable source for the history of the times of the Gemara and afterwards, and you have two different versions of it, which historians call Nusach Tsurfas and Nusach Svard, the French version and the Spanish version. The French version consistently also never mentions Rebbe writing the Mishnayos. The Spanish version always does. So they say one of them seems to reflect Rashi's view and the other one reflects the Rambam's view, which is why they call it that. Nowadays, they generally consider that the Tzorfas one is closer to Rav Shura's original, and therefore that would mean that according to Rav Shura, also Rebbe didn't write the Mishnayos. But it's still up in the air, and historians still argue it back and forth. So Mishum Yikorah Hudukama, so Rebbe was saying it because of the covered, because you want as much covered for the Torah as possible when people are gathering together in the big cities to make the hesped for him. A couple of them, before we should point out over here, also we find from other Gemaras that the Nifter himself has tremendous Nachas Ruach when he hears what they're saying about him in his hesped, in the hesped. By us in Lubavitch, by the way, the minhag is not to do a hesped by the Levaya, for as I understand it, the reason is because we're concerned that we might over-exaggerate what the Nifter did, and it's not really so good for him in the Olam Ha'emes. Afterwards, sometime during the Shiva, people get together and they tell Meisen of him and whatever, and therefore it's not at least at the time when the Neshama is so present, and therefore it's not so harmful in case they over-exaggerate. So there is, in fact, a point that's made in this connection. There's Gemara in Moed Katan that mentions that Rav Ashi also, one time, goes over, in those times, they often had professional maspidim. They would have professional speakers or poets who would speak or who would say poetry or whatever by a levaya in order to get people, in order to arouse people's emotions that they should cry. So the Gemara tells in Moed Katan that Rav Ashi, one time, goes over to a couple of these professionals and asks them, what are you going to say on the day when I'm gone? And each of them says something which Rav Ashi doesn't really like. What kind of a thing? Rav Ashi is concerned what they're going to say about him after 120. So that's one answer. Is Rav Ashi, like Rebbe, is also representing an important stage in the transmission of Torah Shavuot. He composed the Gemara, which also after the Gemara, nobody argues with it. So therefore, particularly at junctures like that in Jewish history, when you're going from one, when you're transitioning from one stage, from one era of Jewish history to another, so it's particularly important that people should realize the greatness of what the one who ended that period, Rebbe and Rav Ashi respectively, what they accomplished for the Jewish people, and therefore it's important to know what the Maspidim at that time are going to be saying, and that they should be saying it with maximum publicity, so everybody should realize. Anyway, then he continued in his instructions. Hashivu yeshiva l'achas shloshim yom. He says, set back up the yeshiva that they should continue learning Torah after 30 days. Why 30 days? Because he says, d'lo yadifnu mimoshe Rabbeinu. I don't want to be held greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. D'chtiv, vayuvku b'nei tzolos Moshe ba'arvus moyev shloshim yom. It says they cried for him in arvus moyev for 30 days. So therefore, 30 days is going to be the maximum for me as well. Now, the Gemara, so the Gemara says, fine, so what they did is, tlus in Yoimin, for 30 days, safti be mom of Aleoya. For 30 days, they were mourning Rebbe by day and by night. Mikan ve'elach, after that, since Rebbe said they have to continue learning, safti be mom of a gausi b'Aleoya. They would be mourning Rebbe by day and continuing to learn at night. Or they would learn by night, or they would make the hesped, they would cry by night and learn by day, until they went through 12 months that way. Now, Marsha points out that in that case, in a way, it is greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, because we're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu, the limit of crying was 30 days, and here they're saying, that they still continued to cry off and on for the rest of the 12 months. So Marshall says, okay, fine, but Rebbe didn't give that instruction. That they did on their own, so therefore that we don't care so much. Marshall also points out, when you get down to it, is here we're talking about the hesped. There in the pasuk, we're talking about the b'chi, which is the crying. They're not really the same thing. A hesped is a eulogy, is when they're talking about the greatness of Rebbe. By Moshe Rabbeinu, it was that they cried for 30 days. But the point is, Marashal says, fine, Rebbe didn't want that the hesped of him should be more than the b'chia, more than the crying for Moshe Rabbeinu. Ion Yaakov points out the fact is, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, we're actually going to have it in a couple of days in Daf Yomi, that the famous expression, from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe, you never had Toto Gdula B'Makom Echad, you never had that a single person was both the greatest Talmid Chacham of the generation and also had the greatest political power. You had that in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, of course. He was the leader of the Jewish people, Gashmius, and he was also their leader in Torah. After that, you never have that. After that, for example, Yoshua, let's say, was the leader in Torah, but you had Elazar was his equal in Torah as well. You have Pinchas. The Gemara goes through the generations over there and shows how in each of the generations from Moshe until Rebbe, you always had there was some co-equal in political power or in Torah knowledge. Now, for the first time, you have them the same, so that's why Rebbe has to stress that don't think I'm any greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chassam Sofer actually has a very interesting explanation about it. He says, so what is this that we're saying they would learn by day and they would cry by night or vice versa? He says what would happen is they would be learning Torah and all of a sudden it would hit them all over again what they're missing now that Rebbe is gone. So that would lead them to the next time when Seder is over, they would be crying and bewailing Rebbe. So, or the other way around, they'd be learning Torah by night and realize how much they're lacking now that Rebbe is gone, and therefore they'd be crying the next day. So that's what we mean, that this would go off and on like that during throughout the 12 months. They would go back and forth between their learning. We know we have to throw ourselves into learning, but every time they would realize how keenly what they've lost with Rebbe being gone, and therefore, yeah. The Gemara continues, Hahu Yomadash Gavta de Rebbe, on the day that Rebbe passed away, Nafka Baskova Omra, a basko came out and announced, called the Habavash, Kavta de Rebbe, Mizuman hu l'chaya her l'mabo. Anybody who was there when Rebbe passed away, or by Rebbe's levaya, is ready for chaya her l'mabo. Now, Tosfos says, what do you mean, Mizuman l'chaya l'mabo? Kor Yisrael yesh l'mchev k'l'mabo. Tosfos explains, brings from Rabbeinu Meir, who is the father of the Rashbam and the Rivam and Rabbeinu Tam, that what it means is Mezuman L'Chayin Alavah means a regular person is Yesh Lam Chelik Lam Abba, but he may have to go through a judgment first in the Beis Din Shamayla. You have to maybe go through Yisurim, as opposed to when we say Mezuman, he's ready L'Chayin Alavah, means he's ready right away without any prerequisites. He's got an automatic entry ticket into Olam Abba without anything else. Yeah. So why is that? Maharsha points out, later on, the Gemara is going to say that on the day that Rebbe passed away, Batla Kedusha. Then Kedusha was Batla on that day. We're going to talk about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that it means maybe that even the Koyanim were able to join in the Levaya and everything, even though, of course, normally Koyanim do not. So it means, in other words, that the So it means that everybody who's involved in the hesped and the burial and everything of Rebbe is joining in the covered of Rebbe. Therefore, he has that special schus that he's mezuman l'chayim abba. There is also an explanation that the reason is, based on what we were saying before, about what the unique thing that Rebbe accomplished for the Jewish people, anybody who was there when Rebbe passed away and doing the Levaya and the Hesped and all that is so motivated by that to realize how important Torah is that they rededicate themselves there with such a chayus to keep it going on that Rebbe should continue to live in this world, that therefore, that itself, that mentality, that now we're going to throw ourselves completely into Torah, that makes them Mezuman L'chayim Abba. Now, the Gemara tells Ahu Kovis, there was a certain laundryman. Who was this laundryman? We'll talk about in a minute. Kol Yoma Hava Ofi Kamei. Every day he would come to see Rebbe. Ahu Yoma Loi also. That punk, that day that Rebbe passed away, this laundryman did not come. Kivin to Shama Hochi, when he heard this baskel, that anybody who was there was Mezuman L'chayim Abba, he was so upset. Solik L'Igra, he went up onto the roof, V'nafal L'Aro Mis, and he fell down onto the ground and died. How could he commit suicide? Let's talk about it in a second. Let's finish the paragraph first. Yotza Baskel V'Omra, Baskel came out and announced, Afa hu kovis mezuman l'chayim l'abba, that laundryman is also ready for chayim l'abba. So what's going on over here? So one point is that so there are mafoshim who learn. The big question is, how could he commit suicide like that? Now there are mafoshim that learn that means doesn't necessarily deliberately do it. It means he was in such fire that he went up onto the roof and he fell off without realizing. Or even Ben Yehoyada says maybe like he meant to jump off like a low roof and punkti landed in such a way that it killed him. I'll bet like you have, by the way. You have, for example, with the story in Gifted about the woman whose seven sons were killed by the Greeks, Al-Kiddush Hashem, where afterwards the Gemara also says she went up onto a roof and fell off, and then Baskel came and said, Eina bonim smecha. There also you have the discussion. Does it mean that she committed suicide because she went out of her mind after all her children being killed? Or does it mean maybe she did it because she's afraid that they're going to force her to worship Avodah Zarah? Or maybe also different sort of similar explanations you can have over here as far as this koivis. Another possibility is also the Yerushalmi tells us that Rebbe passed away on Erev Shabbos, and that now you think about it, the time it's going to take for the tahara and the burial, especially if you have so many people by Rebbe's levaya, it's going to end up going into Shabbos. So the Yerushalmi in our same sugya, the parallel sugya in Yerushalmi, says the Eibishter made the day longer so that nobody's mechal Shabbos. Well, this koivis wasn't there, therefore therefore he thought that he was mechal Shabbos. So there are mafoshim who learn that if a person has reason to think that he did something that would make him chayav koris or chayav misa or whatever, there are mafoshim who learn that he's allowed to bring that misa on himself. So that would explain then why he did it. And therefore, but then there are other mafoshim who say maybe Taka, he was wrong. Listen, you know, maybe he was a parsha to yid, he was an amoritz. He didn't know these details of halacha. Nevertheless, the Eibishter had realized that he meant well, and therefore gives him chayav olam haba.
You bring misa on yourself, isn't that suicidal?
That's what I'm saying. So you have mafoshim who learn that if a person realizes that he's chayav misa for something, that he's entitled to do it. There's other examples like that. There's a medrash, for example, that tells about a nephew of Yosef ben Yezer, who was one of the misyavnim, where he at the last moment did tshuva and did on himself all four misas based in. And Yosef ben Yezer sees, he says, his neshama got to Gan Eden ahead of me. So there are mafoshim, there are poskim who talk about the possibilities of that. But again, maybe the other possibility is maybe that he didn't mean to, that he pushed it, he was so upset that he went up onto the roof. Who was this Koivis anyway? Now, there's a Gemara in Nedarim, which we'll get to in a few weeks' time, Be'ez Hashem, that tells a story where Rebbe had many different mahalachim, many different approaches to in Torah, 13 different approaches, and there came a point in Rebbe's life where he was sick and forgot a whole bunch of them. Then the Gemara says there was a kovis, there was a laundryman who used to regularly be around Rebbe, and he may not have been a Talmud Chacham himself, but he was around enough to pick up enough of that he was able to help Rebbe reconstruct those missing ones. So some of them, before say, that's the same kovis over here. So he has a special reason to be upset that he wasn't there on the day Rebbe passed away. He himself had helped Rebbe recover so much of his learning. So there's that. There's the Chassam Sofer also mentions, there's a Gemara in Baba Basra that tells a story where one time in Rebbe's times, the government made a gzera that the Jews have to contribute, have to give a certain amount of an extra tax towards a crown for the emperor. The upshot of it is, the Gemara discussed it over there, Talmud Chachamim are not supposed to be taxed. So the upshot of it is that the Amei Oretz left town, and there's one laundryman stayed behind, and the government is going to make him pay the entire tax, and then he left town, and then the government gave up on trying to collect the tax, even though the Talmud Chachamim remained in town, and Rebbe says, you see that the whole trouble came because of the Amei Oretz. So that's another possibility. This Kovis may have been that same Kovis from that story, where again we see that through him, it was demonstrated that Puranus only comes to the world because of Amei Oretz, never because of Talmud Chachamim. The Maharal has one more explanation about who this Kovis was. He says, metaphorically, the Kovis over here was a Baal Teshuva. A Kovis, after all, is a laundryman. He's taking dirty clothes and washing them and making them white again. So this guy was a Baal Teshuva, was an aspiring Baal Teshuva who's working on cleaning himself up and on laundering himself. So now, he realized, had he been there when Rebbe passed away, it would have given him that extra boost to do the most perfect possible tshuva. And now, therefore, that he missed that, then he feels very bad about that. And therefore, he's being told, don't worry, you also have chayilam abba, because you did as much as you did with your own kushas, as much as you were able to. And you also, your tshuva will be completely accepted, and you're coming to chayilam abba. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola. What's today? Yud Tes Tavis. So you have like this. Tiferes has to do with the learning of Torah. Then you have Malchus Shabbat Tiferes. This is the Rebbe was giving a sicha on the third Shabbos of Sfiras Omer, where it's Malchus Shabbat Tiferes. Malchus Shabbat Tiferes specifically is learning Torah regarding Melech Mashiach and regarding Inyon and Gola that are explained in so many different places. In Torah Shebichsav, so you have, first of all, in Torah Shebichsav, you have, especially as the Rambam points out, in Nevi'im, all the Sforim of Nevi'im are full of the concept of Mashiach, and you have in Torah Shebal Peh, you have a lot of details about Mashiach, Gemara, Medrashim, especially even more so, you have in Pnimiyas HaTorah, starting with the Zohar, more so in Torah Chassidus from the Rebbeim, especially most of all in the Ma'amorim and the Sichas of the Friedrich Rebbe and of our Rebbe. So all of this is a Me'ein, all of this is a preview and a preparation for learning the Torah Chadashim, the Torah of Mashiach. And when we increase in learning Torah regarding Mashiach and Gola, when we increase in that Malchus Shetik Tiferes, then that is here you have in Pirkei Avos the expression Tiferes Loi, Koshi Tiferes Loi Service, Tiferes Loi Min Adam. So that will be, as he says over there, Ezi Derech Yeshara, what is the straight way of a person, Tiferes Loi, this is the straight way to accomplish that Mashiach will taka be revealed and come, and the Gola will come upon Mamash.
Right.
Amen. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos. So here's another thing of Shabbos, which is not a malacha, but nevertheless, it's also to do on Shabbos. You're not allowed to give another person a present on Shabbos. And now, to that adds, that would apply even to a goy. Only if it's Litzorich Shabbos or Litzorich Mitzvah. Similarly, also, you can't give a mashkin to somebody else, the same thing, unless it's for a mitzvah or Litzorich Shabbos. And even then, don't tell him this is a mashkin, just give it to him without saying, and then after Shabbos, you'll work out the details. Here's another din. There's something called shtore hedyotis, which means mundane writings. So in other words, not writings of Torah, but for example, shtore choiv, for example, IOUs or other business documents like that. also, for example, letters, just plain old letters that the plain old letters that people are telling you the news or whatever. Those kinds of things, you're not even allowed. You're not only you're not allowed to read them on Shabbos, you're not even just allowed to look at them, even though you're not really thinking about them, because we said before here who mutter. We said you are allowed to think about business matters on Shabbos, you're just not allowed to speak about them. But that's where it's not noticeable. If you're Stam sitting over there where you're lost in your thoughts and you're thinking in business, nobody around you knows what you're thinking of. But here, when you have a letter in front of you, or you have a document in front of you that has some business matter in it, and people can see that you're looking at it, then it's obvious you're thinking into the content of it, and that would be the issue of Mimsoi Cheftzecha.
So that's just in public?
So but in general, we have a concept. In general, we have a concept that when something is also because of Maris Ha'ayin, it's also even in private. So yeah.
Here
is Mutter, but that's what we're saying, only when it's not obvious from the fact that he has a letter in front of him. So now, let's say, suppose a person receives a letter and he doesn't know what it says in it, he is allowed to look in it because there might be something that's important for him to know, but even then he shouldn't read it verbally, just look at it with his eyes. If he knows that it's strictly a business matter, then it would be also to look at it at all, and for that matter, it would even also be Mukta, so he wouldn't even be allowed to move it. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe says that, listen, you know, conceivably you might use it, let's say, to wrap up, to use like as a bottle stopper or whatever. If it's like apparently the Alter Rebbe seems to be saying, if it's like junk mail or something, you wouldn't mind using it for that, then you would be allowed to on Shabbos. Because then it's not completely mukta, because then you have a possible use for it on Shabbos, let's say to wrap up a candy or something in it. But other than that, if it's something where you're makbid, you need to keep it. Let's say, for example, so imagine, you know, here it's the beginning of the year, people are starting to get their various records that they're going to need to file their taxes. Those you're not going to use to wrap up a candy or whatever. So those would technically be mukta on Shabbos, because those are business matters and you have no business looking at them or thinking about them on Shabbos.